Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dear gas prices, go take a hike. Toyota is the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. The Toyota hybrid lineup brings efficiency with power and savings with style. Not to mention top tech to help keep you connected. Plush premium interiors and the most advanced Toyota safety features. So, now you know who you're talking to. Toyota, the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. With a hybrid or electric vehicle built for every driver. Seriously, dear gas prices, do you really think you could stand in our way? Think again. Toyota hybrids. Find yours at Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Based on manufacturer estimates, CY 2000 through 2021 sales.
Everybody, Frank Lampard is the new Everton manager. Deal finally struck by the football club today. An interesting appointment, essentially a divisive appointment, but I'm sure we're all very happy that it's over and done with. So as we tend to do here on the Blue Room, big appointment. We spoke to the people who know all about our new boss. Back-to-back conversations here. First and foremost, it's Richard Cusack from the Derby Telegraph, who told us all about Lampard's time at Derby and a little bit about Wayne Rooney as well and Everton's potential interest in him, which was unrequited in the end. Following that, it's Jacob Steinberg from The Guardian, who covers Chelsea over there, who started covering Chelsea when Frank Lampard started as Chelsea manager at a spell at Stamford Bridge, at his former club, where he had a mixed spell. The greatest ever player at Stamford Bridge, but not necessarily the greatest manager there, but there's some good points, some bad points, and we got into it all over the course of the next 40 minutes. Really appreciate everyone for listening, and fingers crossed we can draw a line under this managerial search now and move forward and get this team going in the right direction in the Premier League. But here's hopefully every question you've got about our new manager answered by the people who know best.
That might be... I mean, the thing is, that's probably a little bit harsh, but the only reason why I say that is because ultimately he took a team that had finished sixth under Gary Rowett, and while the season before, and while there was obviously a big turnover in players, he had some really, really good players in that side. Mason Mount on loan was just like, in the Championship in 2018, Mason Mount was playing second tier football. I mean, he was injured for a little bit, so that didn't help, but Harry Wilson as well, and Fikeo Tomori, who got transferred to AC Milan for 30 odd million quid in a couple of years' time. He had a really good, really, really good team. Spent a lot of money on some really bad players, like Martin Waghorn, about £5 or £6 million on him. Jack Marriott, you know, but two players who've left on free transfers last summer. But recruitment wasn't great, apart from the loan players. And the thing is, he got Derby in the playoff final, fair play. That is a good achievement. Beat Leeds United in that memorable night for Derby fans. But after that, what is your legacy? And ultimately, the legacy was very bad signings for a lot of money on big contracts. And ultimately, it's a situation where you've left after a year. It still leaves a sour taste, even now. You can probably hear in my voice. It left a sour taste how it ended, Lampard and Derby fans, giving him his route into management. And after a year, it played out over the summer. The players reported back for pre-season in the July, and the manager was still, it was an unclear his situation. So he didn't leave on the greatest of on the greatest of terms. And also, I would say that while some of the football was superb, I'm thinking about back to games against, there was one in, against Blackburn, there was some in the run to the playoffs, but there were some bad performances. Rotherham and Bolton early on in the season, some bad performances. I mean, it was a memorable season in terms of memories, beating Man United, getting to the playoffs, beating Leeds. But after that, just the legacy, what he left behind wasn't ideal in the slightest for Philip Cocu, the next man to pick up.
It's really interesting that, because obviously I wouldn't have watched Derby anywhere near as much as yourself, but from when I did see them that campaign, my standout memories were of a team, like you said, that played attacking football. Didn't always get it right by any means, but it felt like there was a real bond between Lampard, the players, and the fans. And the game that does spring to mind is the one you mentioned there, the away game where Derby went to Leeds and won 4-2 to get in the playoff final. You know, that night, it sort of felt like a club in unison with, you know, players that were playing for the manager. You know, there's the video clip of him singing in the change rooms afterwards. It felt like he'd really, you know, fostered a great sense of unity there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The fans would name that season, well, apart from this season, of course, where, the players, the management, because the players were really funny on social media as well. There was a real camaraderie. The club were putting out videos where they were playing pranks on each other and stuff, and the squad was as one. And it's interesting you pick up on that Leeds game, because to be fair to Lampard, that Leeds game was one where he showed his tactical acumen and actually outfoxed Marcelo Bielsa by going with a diamond formation that I don't think Derby had played at all that season. So that was, that's one thing to pick up on, that he did switch that up and showed a bit of tactical nous in that game. But obviously it will be remembered for giving Derby fans one of the best nights, certainly in recent history, following the club. And to be fair, it's looking at what Lampard can do to Everton. What he did when he came in with Derby was he was obviously a rookie manager, and he's still a rookie manager. He's only managed 2.5 seasons, hasn't he, in total? So there's not a big back catalogue to look at. But certainly in terms of being at Derby, he used his contacts to get transfers, and you're perhaps already seeing that with links to Donny van der Beek, for example. Don't be surprised to see. Although it would be different with Everton in the Premier League, certainly. But don't be surprised to see Lampard use his contacts to bring players in, because that's one thing, that was one massive plus for him moving to Derby.
It's very hard to say with Lampard, because I think it depends how you approach it with him. I think he seems to wind people up, people who don't support Chelsea. There seems to be a certain level of glee in him being seen to have done badly. And I think there's I don't know whether there's an element of people thinking that, you know, there's an element of privilege there, that he got quite a good job as his first job out of nowhere. And then after a year, having not taken Derby into the Premier League when he had, you know, quite a good squad there and people like Mason Mount and Tomori on loan, that he then walked into the Chelsea job, which, you know, it was certain circumstances there and everything, but it feels like people, some people have been waiting for him to fail. So on the other hand, there will be people who will have really, really back him and would sort of come in a positive way and point out, he did get Derby to the playoff final, and he got them playing a really nice style of football, and at Chelsea got them into the Champions League, and despite having the transfer ban. So it's quite hard at times to know where exactly you want to how to approach it with him, because there are so many kind of there are so many caveats at times, both to both sides of the argument, both negative and positive. You can take it the negative way, you can take it the positive way, and each time there feels like there's a counterpoint. And the thing is that he's only had 2.5 seasons as a manager, and they're both such different jobs that he had, Derby and Chelsea, that it's kind of hard to know exactly where his level lies. And the fact that he had such a big jump from Championship to one of the biggest clubs in Europe, and that obviously ended so badly at Chelsea, it feels like where do you go from Chelsea, but also as a club, how exactly do you judge him? Because it's very, what Chelsea might have needed in the summer of June, in 2019, is not necessarily what Everton need now, which is someone to take them away from the bottom three and really sort of give a struggling side and club a lift. And that wasn't what Chelsea needed, and it wasn't really what Derby needed. So it's kind of hard to tell exactly what whether he would have a massively galvanizing effect. I mean, when he came into Chelsea, and he was very easy for him to have that galvanizing effect, because he was a club legend, and he was, coming into Everton, he's an outsider, he's an Essex guy and everything, and from down south, so it's not like he'll know necessarily the city, so that will be something that he'll have to get used to and everything, and work out a connection with the fans, and very quickly get going, and it's very hard to tell with him how it will work out.
I think that's a really interesting way of putting it. And sort of looking at that first season at Chelsea, which is obviously the main positive part of his tenure with the football club, you can sort of do that even with that campaign as well, can't you? Because like you said, obviously he had the energy which he harnessed by being one of the club's greatest ever footballers. He played young players, obviously, and in Mason Mount and Reece James, but you obviously look at them now and think, well, of course he was going to play them, the really good young footballers. But overall, that felt like a really impressive body of work that first season, because he came and he had to integrate a lot of new lads into the setup. Chelsea had lost another one of the greatest ever players in Eden Hazard, and I know Christian Pulisic was brought in the January, so he sort of got around the transfer ban. But it felt like that season, at least, he did a really good job of sort of steadying the football club at a time where things could have maybe gone a little bit off the rails.
Yeah, I think I think it would be a very harsh critic and someone who would really want to kick all kinds of holes in Lampard's body of work, who would just take that first season and just completely write it off and say, no, this guy is a complete joke, and just look at how it worked out when he had the backing of the summer that came. I mean, it really has to be pointed out, he didn't have he wasn't able to make signings, and Pulisic, yes, he did get Pulisic, and that's something that shouldn't be overlooked, and Chelsea spent a lot of money on him, but that was a player that was signed before Lampard came in, and also a player who was very, very young and didn't have any Premier League experience and took a while to settle. I don't think he was ready to, he wasn't at the Eden Hazard level. It's not like they were signing a sure thing in Pulisic. So, it could have been a different manager who might have taken it on, who might have taken on that role, and may not have promoted the youngsters in such a big way. They may not have trusted people. It could have been a manager who might have stuck around. Maybe if Sarri had stuck around, he might have trusted Giroud more than Tammy Abraham, and he might have trusted Ross Barkley more than Mason Mount, and given him more starts. But very quickly, Mason Mount was the main man in that midfield, and that was a bold move that Lampard took, even taking into account the transfer ban and taking into account how good a lot of those youngsters were. It still took someone to really give them a real chance. And there were points, there were high points that they, there was the very impressive win over Jose Mourinho's Tottenham at a point when it seemed like Tottenham were going in the right direction under Mourinho. They went to Spurs in December after a bit of a bad run Chelsea had, And he actually, you know, they've been playing in a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 for quite a long time, pretty much all season. And he caught Mourinho out that day going to a back three, which does, to be fair, you know, suit a lot of these players. And it was something they did, you know, they still kind of had in their sort of in their muscle memory from the Conte days. Very, very good that day. Big win that kind of, you know, against the Champions League rival at the time. He won at Arsenal. I know, you know, it's not the best Arsenal side, but they won there. Beat Manchester United in the FA Cup semi-final. They beat Liverpool along the way. They gave Liverpool some good games that season. Only got one win, but they did give that was the Liverpool side that won the league, and they did give them some problems. He beat Manchester City at home that season, and he got them out of a relatively tough Champions League group as well. They were a bit lucky to get out of that group. There was you know, some hairy moments, I'd say, in that group. But they had Lille, Ajax, and that was a very good Ajax side, and they had Valencia as well, decent Valencia side, and they got out of that group. I think they finished second, last 16. You know, they got a very tough draw. They got Bayern Munich, who went on to win the Champions League that season. The difference, you know, the level was very, very clear in the first leg, and I don't think that Thomas Tuchel would be with the side that Lampard had available to him at that point, with no signings, would have done much better than how Lampard did against that Bayern side, who were at the absolute peak of the power. So, you know, there were definite positives. The flip side to it, you know, the caveats that come in that I was talking about before. You know, let's take that Champions League run. I'll give you maybe two games. They won well at Ajax they won 1-0 at Ajax, and it was a very kind of professional, impressive, clinical away performance in Europe. And you kind of thought, this is going in the right direction. They then get Ajax at home and they drew 4-4 with Ajax. Ajax were 4-1 up, and it took a real, like, massively controversial refereeing moment where the ref sent off two Ajax players in a minute and gave Chelsea a penalty at 4-1, so down to nine men. They get it back to 4-4, but even at 4-4, you know, in that game, Ajax with nine men were creating chances. Chelsea's so defensively suspect that season. They went to Valencia as well. Honestly, that game could have finished 2-2. That game could have, I remember that it could have finished, you know, 7-5 to Valencia. Anything, it could have been anything. And they, like Chelsea, they were really, you know, the Valencia striker. Remember, I think it's the guy that leads Rodrigo, missing an absolutely inexplicable open goal in the 95th minute, which basically would have put Chelsea out and into the Europa League. So there were all these kind of knife edge moments even throughout that run. It's, you know, it took, they were, they finished fourth that season. They conceded along the way 54 goals at home. They had a lot of dodgy results at home against sort of teams that you would expect them to beat. You know, they lost at home to Bournemouth, Southampton around Christmas. They got stuffed at Liverpool after during Project Restart. They got stuffed at Sheffield United during Project Restart, which saw sort of one of the first real moments of Lampard kind of turning on the players publicly. So they only got in there on the last day when they did do well against Wolves. You know, then a week later, FA Cup final against Arsenal. They go 1-0 up. It's not a great Arsenal side, and in the end, you know, they lose that, unable to handle unable to handle Aubameyang. And so, you know, there were all these sort of positives and negatives that were kind of coming into it at the same time. And then it, you know, comes to the summer, and the stakes just get so much higher with the signings that were made. You know, the shackles are off in terms of spending. I think it was like 220 million on around eight players that came in, and we all know how it turned out.
Something you probably do know, Progressive can not only offer you a great price when you bundle home and auto, they offer you round-the-clock protection. Something you probably don't know, the average oak tree branch can hold 70 pounds. Something you probably do know, your neighbor is building their kid a treehouse. Something you probably don't know, a falling treehouse would take out your whole fence. Bundle your home and auto with Progressive and get more than a great price. Get round-the-clock protection. Something you know for the things you don't know. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and third-party insurers, and subject to policy terms. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.